What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
It's been a busy couple of weeks for Kyle Dubas. Trade deadline is over. And for the Leafs, there's been a lot of changes. They brought in six new players. So we're just going to talk a little bit, just give our overall thoughts on what Kyle Dubas, if I could pronounce his name right, Kyle Dubas did at the deadline. Did he do enough? Did he do too much? I don't know, based on the road trip so far, it was 3 games and 4 nights go out west, and last night versus Vancouver wasn't really the greatest, but I don't know. They were doing the 11 forwards, 7 defensemen thing too, kind of was not a good idea to do it 2 games in a row. But overall, the 6 new guys so far, I think it's going to take a little bit longer, obviously, to get into for Keith to actually figure things out with the line combinations and the D pairings and that. But I think it's good. And I was very happy about Matt Murray playing well last night too. He was hung out to drive there for quite a few chances. But yeah, what do you think about the deadline?
Well, this was my impression. So first two guys that they brought in, I was like super excited. I thought this is amazing. They played great right off the hop. Very excited. Next two guys, I was like, oh yeah, this is good. This is really going to add something to our team.
Yeah.
Next two guys. And I started thinking, is this maybe too much? So I got started to get a little nervous. Like, how are they going to get all of these new bodies to gel? So, I think part of the way is what Keith did for the last two games by going 11 and 7 to try to get as many different people, different looks. So that's why I'm not really, you know, putting too much stock into how these last 3 games went, really, because there's just been too many changes and they're obviously really, really experimenting, because there's also no practice time during this time where they could kind of get everybody in and doing stuff together with all 6 new bodies. So
that Edmonton game, like the way they came out, that was basically out of the 3. I think that was really the worst one. And I think it was just, I actually think that one, they played that poorly because the 3 players, not so much Tavares, but Nylander, Matthews, and Marner, I think they finally, because like all the moves not all the moves weren't done at that point, but the big ones were made. And I think it just came to them that, you know, this is it sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. They, like the GM, has made all these moves and it's up to them. It's up to those core and Morgan Riley too. But Riley and Tavares are more experienced. So that's the mental side of the game. I think that just kind of maybe brought them down a little bit in that Edmonton game. Cause they were just, I'm thinking anyways, cause they were horrible that night. Like Matthews, you didn't see him at all. But and Marner was decent, but Willie was invisible too. Both Willie and Matthews. And Willie, I mean, he lost his 2 buddies there in Engvall and Sandin, right? So that, I mean, there is a human element too. They are friends, and that makes sense. But I just think I couldn't find the name of that. We had we mentioned on a show at the beginning of the season, they're, what is it? The psychologist person that they hired. I forget his name and I couldn't find his name, but I'm thinking that he needs to maybe talk to these guys a little bit more now headed down the stretch, because it's on them. It's on that core group of players now. If they can't get it done, like, this is it.
It's Kyle definitely
Kyle Dubas made it all the moves that he could.
Yes.
To get these guys over the top.
He did a lot of good work. I do agree that that has to be part of their preparation, is making sure their heads are right. That's another reason why it's unfortunate that O'Reilly got hurt in last night's game against Vancouver, because he's a person that, you know, his play on the ice and the way he is off the ice speaks volumes. Plus, his dad is a sports psychologist. So, I mean, he's psychologized his whole life. So I'm sure he says he's like programmed to say the right things, probably. So
they should get him in the room.
Yeah. It would be good if he was around the team this whole time. So anyways, we'll see if he's going to be around the team regardless. Like, you know, Muzzin was still with the team, even though he was rehabbing and all of that. So maybe he will still be around. Like basically the puck is in their end of the ice, so to speak, for the players. And it's all kind of up to them right now. So there's still lots of time left, 20 games for them to basically pull it together. But, you know, by all accounts, I know that chemistry and character are high on Dubas's list. So I don't think he's going to bring in any guys that he foresees would, you know, be an issue. But you still don't ever know really about the team chemistry going in. So hopefully it will all come together. I did feel it was like a lot of moves, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was a lot. And like it's like a third of their lineup, like six new players.
But I mean, it could go either way. It's like, you could say there could be an argument made that everybody's been too friendly and too comfortable to this point. So bringing in fresh blood like this,
it's the jolt exactly. That we talked about last year that we thought they needed at the end of the season or even before the playoffs last year. They needed a jolt, and he basically Dubas gave him the jolt this time. And I think they needed it, and they needed it hopefully to bring them over the top. Mm-hmm. So
I do really think that Luke Shen is a really big add as well, though, because that guy is going to just put it all out there for sure.
Yeah.
And so long as he doesn't go over the top, because we have seen that too, you know, guys, former Leafs, guys that have always dreamed about playing for the Leafs, they come in and they do too much, and it ends up getting screwed up somehow. So barring that, that could be a really, really pivotal, important pickup, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to talk more about Luke Shen in a bit. Yeah.
All right. So just a reminder, we did mention it last time, but after this episode, we will be away until April 5th. So don't miss any episode, and make sure you hit that follow button wherever you listen to our show. We are on all the apps, so Apple, Spotify, and Deezer. Shout out to all of our fans in France. We hear you. We see you. Yeah. And of course, you can find us on the Believe Network also at believe.com.
Yeah. So one more note before we get into the show. After the game versus the Canucks, Sportsnet Stats, of course, they tweeted the records of the Boston Bruins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Toronto Maple Leafs versus bottom six teams. So I know at the beginning of the season, I said that I was going to be tracking it, but these guys went a little bit further, going with the other teams too, or the top three teams in the Atlantic. So the Bruins have a record of 10-1-0. Versus the bottom six teams. The Lightning are 10-0-2, and the Maple Leafs are 5-5-2. So that's quite a difference. But don't think we need to say much more about that. But there was another follow-up tweet from a guy on Leafs Twitter, at Joey Ferg, asking for SN stats to do versus the top teams, which of course they didn't do. It's always a negative when it comes to the Leafs, when it comes to Sportsnet, I find. But I would have been interested in finding those stats as well for those three teams about our record versus top teams. But
yes, because yeah. I think you have to question, what was the point of that tweet?
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think all of Leafs Nation kind of knows how we're doing against these teams. And we also know where we are in the standings versus Boston. So, yeah. You know, definitely those 5 points, we would be a lot closer to them. That's for sure. Yeah. But anyway.
And all right, we would have home ice well in hand with Tampa. But anyways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into the show now. And it's a little different as our segment, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, is going to take a little time off and will return with us on April 5th. And so we're going to start off with a special trade deadline issue of the Ladies Talkin' Leafs highlight reel. And then for our third period segment, we have our LTL insider, Mike Ogiello, joining us to give his perspective on what the Leafs did at the trade deadline. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
All right, we have a big trade deadline edition of the Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel. So let's roll it.
All right, coming in at number 3 is the deal with Chicago that got us Jake McCabe and Sam Lafferty. McCabe looked a little nervous in his first game as a Leaf, but was good the past couple of games. And of course, he stood up for our captain the last yeah. night as well. And yeah, definitely he's been great against the Flames and the Canucks. Lafferty. He is a speedy winger with some jam to his game. And the way Keefe has been mixing up the lines, we definitely need to see where Lafferty will be fit in the bottom six.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what Sam Lafferty brings to the lineup. Because like we said, he has some jam and he's fast. And
yeah, I really noticed him last night.
Yeah, he goes into those dirty areas. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing where he comes in. I think last night, I'm just going to look it up here. The last night he was on the fourth line, I think. Let me just mm-hmm. see, because they were only playing he was on the third line between O'Reilly and Bunting. They had him on versus the Canucks. And then in the previous game versus the Flames, it was Kerfoot on the left, right. Bunting was up with Matthews and Marner. So it's been Lafferty and O'Reilly the last couple of games. So we'll see what happens now that O'Reilly might be out for a little bit. Hopefully not. But yeah. And then with Jake McCabe, it's funny. I like him because apparently he had the no trade list too, like for mm-hmm. the 6 Canadian teams. Right. And of course, the only Canadian team that wasn't there on that list was us. So he obviously wanted to come, like, doesn't mind coming to Toronto and the big market and the big show. And yeah, and he stepped up for JT, like you said. So he was showing that, although there should have been somebody else, maybe. I mean, it was his third game. So you would think that somebody else would have been there too. But it's nice to see someone other than Michael Bunting stepping up for.
But I do think that as a new guy, you kind of want to show that you're there for your new teammates. So I feel like that's something that they do. Because even last year, or no, didn't Foligno did the same thing when we got him?
Yeah. I think that was Tavares that got
Tavares
hit too.
That time too. Yeah. So
poor JT. Oh gosh. He was...
So in that regard, like, I don't really mind that he did that. And of course, JT was very grateful for him stepping in like that.
And thankful he got up. That was quite the hit that what's his name? Tyler Myers did on him.
It was borderline dirty to me. But anyway, it's the height difference probably. Yeah. You know, when you got a guy that big, almost everyone he hits is going to be a little bit lower and easier to get the head, right? So,
yeah. Okay, so coming in at number 2 on Kyle Dubas's, what we've chosen out of Kyle Dubas's trade deadline additions is Luke Shen. he's a Leaf once again. And former first overall pick for the Leafs in the 2008 draft. That was the same draft as Steven Stamkos, pick number one overall. He played four seasons with the Leafs before being traded to Philly for JVR. I've totally forgot. I looked it up. I was like, I knew that he was traded for something. Of course, I have my JVR jersey, and I thought to myself, that's the connection there. But big question for us for his first game back as a Leaf at Scotiabank Arena, will they bring back Luke's troops? That's what we want to know. Yeah. not Loop's troops.
Yes.
Luke's troops.
Yes. It went from Luke's to Loops to Leafs. So I don't know. I think they probably won't. They'll keep it generic. That way they don't have to change it up every time. I'm hoping that he gets a big ovation. He seems like so excited to be coming back. He's definitely, when they're interviewing him, I'm like, wow, he really is a man now. Like compared to when he was here, he was still a boy. And he's really paid his dues and learned the ropes. So, I think, as I said before, I think it's going to be an important ad for our team come playoff time for sure.
Yeah, and he's won the Stanley Cup too. So,
yeah, right,
with Tampa. So he's going to know the opponent for us.
Can never have enough guys that know what it takes to get through that.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of that, we come to our number one addition, and that is Ryan O'Reilly. Noted cup winner, and Noel Achari still looking for his first cup on that deal. So no doubt the O'Reilly factor is what will make a big difference for us in the playoffs. And we hope that the hand injury versus Vancouver won't keep him out of the lineup for too long. He has been great on the draw. Yesterday he had the greatest off game. Night.
Yeah.
That was kind of an off game for him overall. So his percentage is now dipped to a lowly 67% in the circle. And Noel Achari, he's basically come as advertised. He is a grinder who can skate and goes to the tough areas of the ice. He spent his first four seasons with the Bruins, and he was a part of that Bruins team in 2019 that beat the Leafs in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, another guy that knows... that will know one of our opponents quite well that can help us out in that regard. But
how much has Boston changed even?
No, they still have that core. That's why this is their last kick at the can, they think it is anyways. They say that, but
we'll see.
Well, Bergeron and Krejci are only on the 1-year deals, right? Like this is the, they don't know. If they win at all, I think it'll be, they'll be like going off into the sunset finally, and we can get rid of them, but not have to worry about them anymore, right? It'll just be Marchand. I just think that knowing the opponent that way is going to work out. And this is the first deal too that Kyle Dubas made. So by getting Ryan O'Reilly, and again, we just hope that maybe it's not that bad. We saw a picture. Somebody took a photo and they put it on Facebook, on one of the Facebook groups, showing Ryan O'Reilly had the finger in a splint thing or something. So I don't know. I just hope that he's not going to be out for too long if he is out. And because just he just has so much experience. And like you were saying earlier with his dad and that connection, that psychological part of it, of going through each round, four rounds. It's not easy to win the 16 games in the Stanley to get to the ultimate prize, the Stanley Cup. So and he's a guy that, again, he's like kind of like Luke Shen too. It's like, pinch me, he's a Leaf sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. He just can't believe it. And he's a guy that will like take the team on his back too, right? Yeah.
It takes to win the Conn Smythe, which he has done.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that is definitely our, like, the number one. There's no doubt that that's the number one deal that Kyle Dubas made that is going to hopefully end this awful streak of not winning a playoff round. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we've given you what we think are Kyle Dubas's top rate trade deadline deals this season. And now we're going to get a little bit more detailed and discuss the Leafs moves with our Ladies Talking Leafs insider, Mike Ogiello.
Okay, for our third period segment, we're welcoming to the show our Ladies Talking Leafs insider, Mike Ogiello, to talk about what Kyle Dubas did at the deadline.
And as most of you know, Mike covers the Leafs and the NHL as a reporter and does a podcast with HockeyBuzz.com. He is also co-host of Off the Post Radio and the Leafs Convo, and he is a writer for Full Press Hockey. Thanks again for coming on the show, Mike.
Always a pleasure, ladies. We had a lot to discuss. A lot of things happened over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's for sure. That's why we didn't bother having shows in between, because we knew things were just going to keep rolling and rolling. But anyhow, let's get to it. Kyle Dubas got to work early this deadline. And just to run through it, the first with the players that joined the Leafs coming in are Ryan O'Reilly, Noel Achari, Jake McCabe, Sam Lafferty, Eric Gustafson, and Luke Shen. So,
and a partridge out of all these three.
Yeah. Out of all these players, who do you think will have the biggest impact come playoff time, Mike? More in the playoffs, let's just say not.
Yeah, that's tough to say because I think they all serve different roles. I think up front, O'Reilly's obviously the most impactful. He's going to play. Now, you know, up until the last game against Calgary, and that was because they played 11 forwards, they've started O'Reilly at center on the second line with John Tavares. Now with 11 forwards, they mix things up. I believe when the playoffs come around, he's going to be their third line center. Tavares will be on one line, O'Reilly will be on a second line, Matthews will be on a third line. That's to take advantage of him, you know, being a good faceoff guy, a good defensive forward, and as a matchup against, you know, either Braden Point or Cirelli or Nick Paul, whoever Sheldon Keefe decides that he wants to match up. That's to maximize his value. He may be out there as a secondary faceoff guy or even the primary faceoff guy in the defensive zone, but I think impact-wise up front, it's definitely O'Reilly. And I think we've seen that already. The hat trick in Buffalo, his face-off percentage, I think, is in the 70s right now, which is obscene. Achari's going to have an impact. Right-handed center, fourth-line guy. And Lafferty provides some energy. But up front, it's O'Reilly. And on the back end, simply because of ice time, it's going to be Jake McCabe. McCabe is appearing to slot in the top four. He appears to be penciled in as that physical left side defenseman that has been missing since Jake Muzzin got hurt. So he's going to get upwards of 20 minutes a night, and they're going to depend on him probably in matchup situations against, you know, impact forwards against Tampa in the playoffs.
Yeah. So the other night against Calgary, anyways, they played O'Reilly as the third line center, actually between Kerfoot and Lafferty. But then I guess with Tavares and Willie Nylander, I guess they had Yarncroak they had here as starting anyways. But I don't know. Do you think Yarncroak will still stay up there? I think there were so many combinations that Keefe was doing the other night.
It was a weird situation because it was 11 and 7. So you were always going to have different matchups, different combinations. When they get back to the traditional 12 forward, 6 defensemen, I still think O'Reilly's going to be the third line. There's been a history of Kerfoot being that guy with Tavares and Marner and, you know, Yarncroak, O'Reilly, and, whoever they want to put on that.
Lafferty, I guess.
They can go any way of a number of different ways, but I do think when it comes around to playoff time, O'Reilly's going to be the third line center.
Yeah.
Okay. So looking back at these moves, were you surprised with any of the moves that Dubas made, or what about ones that he didn't make? So like, obviously he traded Sandin, he didn't get a goalie. What do you think overall of what he did or didn't do?
Well, the most surprising of all of them was the trade of Sandin. Whether it was the sort of acrimony coming from the offseason and the contract negotiation, or just the fact that with the trade for McCabe, there really wasn't a role for him on the left side. You know, you're going to have Morgan Riley playing 20 plus minutes a night, Giordano essentially penciled into the bottom pairing, and now McCabe on the left side, on the second pairing. You know, there really wasn't a role there, and Sandin had value as a former first round pick and as a talented young player. I'm just surprised, you know, after trading out so much draft capital through all these deals to sort of late in the game recoup a first round pick, which I think is a good thing, but I just would have liked to have seen Sandin sort of play out his situation in Toronto. I mean, I think his main benefit would be as a power play quarterback, and he never really got that opportunity other than when Riley got hurt earlier in the year. He's not going to get that opportunity in Washington as John Carlson is the point guy in the power play. Mm-hmm. So I liked Rasmus Sandin. I know there are some people who've had his detractors about detracted from his value because of his durability, because of, you know, being soft or whatever. I think he would have eventually gotten over those things, but he had value and they saw an opportunity to recoup some draft capital. So that was the one that was the most surprising. The least surprising one was Luke Shen. I mean, I've been talking about Luke Shen for 3 months. I mean, the guy's been leading the NHL in hits, you know, right shot defenseman, big physical guy. I think it became more necessary. Kyle Dubas came out after the Tanner Janot deal with Tampa and then making the McCabe deal and said that the McCabe deal was in the works before even the Boston deal for Dmitry Orlov and Garnet Hathaway. And I believe it was in the works, but I'm calling bull crap on the fact that he didn't pull that deal off because Janot was added to Tampa. I mean, you look at the Leafs defense and the potential of facing Janot, Nick Paul, Ross Colton, Corey Perry, Belmar, and Patrick Maroon. Checkmate, folks. You know, yeah. We needed to upgrade the physicality on the blue line to be able to withstand that group of knuckle-dragging Neanderthals. And I think they accomplished that. I mean, it's still going to be a hell of a task, but I think that Shen was a necessity.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And that's one thing I kind of liked from what we've already seen, that the physicality has definitely been upped for sure. And they played a really strong, especially in the third period against Calgary, really strong physical period there. So,
I think it was screaming in terms of the fact that, you know, this team, you know, there's no doubting this team's talent. I mean, Matthews and Marner and Nylander and, you know, the skill level. But I think most detractors of the Leafs over the last few years have just basically had the situation, you know, have read the situation that they've been run out of the building physically. And I don't think that's going to happen any longer. Now, Tampa is more physical. I think they're going to press the Leafs. They're going to try to force them into giveaways in the defensive zone. But you have pushback now. You have Achari and you have Lafferty and you have Shen and McCabe. There is some pushback. It's not just Michael Bunting jumping on somebody because Austin Matthews is getting picked on. You needed more than that.
Yeah.
And now I think they have more.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so I guess with the defense still, now they have 9 defensemen. I was actually shocked that they didn't do something on the final day, on trade deadline day, to trade at least one of them and get something else. But I was praying
that a certain number 3 was going to be out.
Aren't you giving him credit at least for the decent game he had against the Oilers? That was a pretty good game for him. I mean, he did have some of his usual foibles.
Flames.
I was going to say against the Oilers, the only thing he accomplished was getting knocked out by that noted pugilist, Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
But he stood up to him, though, and he had a pretty physical game that game.
Yeah, I
guess so.
there's very little that Justin Hall can do to recoup his value in my eyes. I hope, as I think most, you know, I'm not a fan, I'm a reporter, but I you know, observing that team as long as I have, and I know talking to a number of Leaf fans, they hope that he is elsewhere next year. And
I doubt they're going to re-sign him, but for the money he makes, that's where it always comes down to is what he gives for the amount that he makes, I guess, is what most people say is, you know, the value that he brings. Right. But anyways,
But
back to the playoff D.
Yeah. Back to the playoff D. What do you think of the pairings, I guess, for game one of the playoffs? Who do you think should be the pairings out of these nine defensemen?
Well,
and maybe I think Jordy Benn is included in that too.
Yeah. So they have 10 NHL defensemen. Oh, okay. Yeah. First of all, I don't think that, I mean, I would be surprised if they do not have Brody and Morgan Rielly together on the top pairing, because Rielly playing with almost every other defense partner has been exposed. And, you know, Rielly needs to be able to freewheel and jump into the offensive attack. And Brody allows him to be able to do that when he plays with Hall, especially the last few games playing with Hall. It's just like, I mean, I'm just waiting for the counterattack and the goal.
Yeah, no, that's a disaster.
That's a complete and utter disaster. I mean, it would be better to play him with Liljegren than to play him with Hall. I don't know why they're doing that. But right now, it's just experimentation, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I would say that, you know, ideally, your top pairing would be Rielly and Brody. Your second pairing would be McCabe and Liljegren. And your third pairing would be Giordano and Luke Shen. Now, do I think that that's who Sheldon Keefe is going to play? No. I think he's going to play Brody and Rielly, probably McCabe and
Liljegren,
and he's going to play Hall instead of Giordano. And then when Hall makes his ridiculous giveaway in game one, then they play Luke Shen. Or they go with seven defense. There's possible that they go with seven defensemen when they're carrying nine. I just know for, like, Connor Timmins will not be in the lineup, not because of anything he has done, but you've got more experience and more physicality with the other players. Keefe trusts Hall to be a penalty killer. That's why he might get the leg up on Timmins. And Gustafson is only there to, in case Morgan Rielly gets hurt. I mean, you saw, I've been a long time, Eric Gustafson's the offensive version of Justin Hall for me. He's been somebody on other teams that I sort of just like shook my head at because he's so bad defensively. And we saw that against Calgary. He first shift on the second power play, he gets burned up and Blake Coleman scores the breakaway goal. So, you know, I think he only plays if Morgan Rielly is injured.
Yeah, because he's a power play specialist, right? That's basically what it is. So, like, to me, like, he's also maybe if they did go with a 7D situation, he could be kind of like mostly sitting on the bench playing the odd shift, but then handling like the second power play unit maybe as the quarterback there. That's basically all I really see with him. But like you said, though, like it's funny how, you know, he's a guy, though, that burned us earlier in the season with like his first ever hat trick against us. Yeah. So that's kind of crazy.
I was thinking if they were going to flip a defenseman at the deadline, it would be him because he's making $800,000. He's got 38 points, and there had to be a team out there looking for an inexpensive power play quarterback. But I guess if they were only getting like sixth or seventh round picks in return, then it probably would have, you know, in Kyle Dubas's mind, it was probably more beneficial to keep him and have him in reserve in case Rielly did get hurt.
Yeah. Do you think they would alternate Giordano and Shen, maybe? Just because the more so the age playoffs, factor, playoffs, sort of, like, no? Yeah,
in the playoffs, no. I think they're going to play Giordano. I think Giordano was one of their best defensemen in the seven-game series against Tampa. I mean, I think the possibility is there. I mean, why would you get Luke Shen unless you're going to play him? And especially against a team that is physical like Tampa. I think you desperately need him in the lineup. I think there's a possibility they're going to go with seven defensemen in the playoffs because they're going to want Shen there. And, you know, I mean, the only, in my mind, the guy to sit is Hall, but I know Sheldon Keefe won't sit him.
But Tampa didn't play Shen every game when they went and got him. They played him like kind of every other game or whatever. So
yeah, but
it's in a way that it's good that then, they could do that if they wanted to, because he's used to it.
But Tampa has sandpaper and size and space, and the Leafs don't. So that means in my mind that means that Shen has to be in the lineup. But whether they see it that way, we'll see. I mean, they spotted him in his first game. I think he played around 10 minutes. I think they'll up his minutes. He was averaging a little over 17 minutes in Vancouver. Now he was playing second pairing with Vancouver, and he's probably going to play third pairing with the Leafs. But I do think they want ideally for him to play 12, 13 minutes a night and continue to be the hitting machine that he's been all year.
All right. So now we're going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
And given all these moves, do you think the Leafs will finally break through and win at least one playoff round?
Okay. I have to preface this to say that I am a noted pessimist.
Yes. So we know that about you, Mike.
my philosophy is I will believe it when I see it. So do I think they're going to beat Tampa? No. Do I think they're capable of doing it? Yes. Now, if you base it based on where this team was last year as compared to this year and where Tampa is, I think Tampa's defense is weaker than it was last year. But up front, I think they're just as strong or stronger. You know, they lost Palat, but they've added Janot, and they're just solid throughout their lineup. You know, Brandon Hagel was an addition at the end of the year last year. This year he's got over 60 points, so they're really good. They're really playoff tested and talented. The Leafs are much better. It's going to rely on, here's a revelation, the core group showing up.
100%.
Now all the secondary pieces are in place. You've added a fourth line face-off guy who's a penalty killer, who's physical. You've added Ryan O'Reilly, who won a Conn Smythe Trophy. You've bolstered the blue line. Now what is it up to? It's up to the goaltending playing up to expectations, which I think they're obviously Murray and Samsonov are leaps and bounds better than Peter Mrazek, Jack Campbell, and Eric Schalgren. So the goaltending is better, but it's whether Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Nylander show up. And if they do, I think they have a good chance to win. I still will pick Tampa, but I wouldn't be surprised if Toronto wins if the core group shows up. If they don't, they're going to lose.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty much splitting hairs last year as well. Like, it was close. But yeah, obviously,
we need to score on the power play. Basically, it was a power play. If we got the goal on the power, our power play sucks all the time. Every time we go into the playoffs, for some reason,
I can't remember who it was that collated the stats, but from 2019 when they played the Bruins in Game 7, and then Columbus Game 5, and then Montreal Game 7, and then Tampa Game 7, the Leafs have scored 1-1-0-1. They've scored one goal in game sevens or deciding games since 2019. 2018, I think they scored four, but they gave up seven. So for this vaunted offense, this powerhouse offense, to not show up at the most inopportune times is the reason why this team, you know, it's not goaltending. I think goaltending last year and in against Montreal came up short, but it wasn't in game seven. It was in game five and it was in game six. In game sevens, it's the offense that didn't show up, and it needs to show up. And if it does, they have a good chance to win. But it's tough to break through Andre Vasilevsky and Carey Price and, you know, Jonas Korpisalo doing his best Pekka Rene imitation. You know, they've run into great goaltending, but you have to beat great goaltending to win in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have time for a few more, Mike?
Yeah. Hey. No problem.
That's good. So let's get on to the topic of Matthew Knies. So yeah. Do you think he's going to join the Leafs? I guess given that I was looking, it was funny. You retweeted something from Puckpedia. I think I saw it there on your on your Twitter. But they left just enough cap space for, I guess, somebody like Matthew Knies, if he, assuming he signs a contract with us, to actually join us.
I believe there's a spot potentially available on the left wing side on one of the lines.
That's the interesting thing. You could say, well, wow, he could just plug in on that second line with Tavares and Marner. But do we really want to put that much pressure on a 20-year-old kid coming out of college, no matter how great of a prospect he is? Mm-hmm. We really want to put him in that position. I think what's going to end up happening is, you know, he plugs in. First of all, he's going to sign. You know, Kyle Dubas went to Minnesota to check him out last week before the trip to Seattle. And, you know, he's had a fantastic season with the Golden Gophers. I think it was 21 goals. He's topped what he did last year. You know, this is a kid at 19, has made the Olympics, made the World Junior. I mean, they hit a home run with him as a second round pick. Now, Kyle Dubas made sure that he pointed out last week that he wanted to make sure that expectations were being managed. And that's the big concern. Like, you know, you know how Toronto is. I was like, oh my God, here's our brand new shiny toy. Remember back in the day, Miroslav Inichak is going to be the next big thing. And he scores a couple goals in his first NHL game against Montreal. And everybody thinks, oh my God, we just signed the, you know, Pavel Bure, or, you know, and the guy was nothing. Mm-hmm. But in Toronto, with it being such a, you know, such a big media market, it's tough for the fan base and for the media to get all hyped up about a really good prospect. But I think Kyle Dubas is right in the sense of managing expectations. So I think, yes, he's going to sign after Minnesota's season is complete. Now, the thing is, I think they're the number one ranked team in the NCAA. They're likely going to go to the Frozen Four. The Frozen Four is April 7th and April 9th. That's the semifinals and the final.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, how much time will he even have to acclimate?
A couple games at most. Yeah. I mean, he could probably, you know, he probably signs on April 10th, and, you know, they have a couple games to get him, to work him in. Now, I mean, if you remember back in the day, Matt Fratton signed out of North Dakota and played the final game. And I think Joe Colburn did the same thing coming out of the NCAA. So yeah, I'm looking at the schedule right now. Their final two games, final three games are all on the road, April 10th in Florida, April 11th against Tampa Bay, and April 13th against the New York Rangers. I don't know if you want to put him in a debut against the Lightning, who are going to send a message to them, you know, before they play in the playoffs. And that game could be for home ice advantage. So, but yeah, I think he's going to sign. I think he'll sign a three-year entry-level deal, probably with all the bonuses, all the trimmings. They did keep enough money to sign him to that deal it would likely be the same amount as a first round pick, because he's a highly regarded prospect. But I think but whether they use him in the playoffs, I don't know. We know Sheldon Keefe has always been shy of using rookies in key spots,
even during
the regular season. So in the playoffs, that's why I think at most he'll be a fourth line guy.
Okay.
All right. That sounds good.
All right. So one more thing that I have for you here. So do you think, like, because of all the players that they got, a lot of them are not speedy guys. And we know that, you know, they like to play like kind of a puck possession, speed kind of game. How do you think the overall team speed is going to be impacted? And how do you think this is going to affect their style of play going forward?
Well, I mean, Lafferty is fast.
We have seen flashes of that for sure.
Yeah, but O'Reilly's not overly fast, but all the players that they acquired, except for Gustafson, he's a good skater, but I think he's barely going to play. Mm-hmm. they're all puck possession guys. They're guys who are good against the wall. They, you know, good defensive players. So I mean, their overall team speed may have been decreased slightly by some of these additions, but I think what they've gained is experience and where they needed to improve, which is on the wings, on the boards, positionally. I don't think it's going to be a major factor in terms of, you know, I mean, Tampa Bay is not an overly fast team. They've got some real burners like Kucherov. Mm-hmm. But if you look at that bottom six, you know, Nick Paul is a big, not relatively slow forward. Corey Perry is on his last legs. So, you know, they don't have a bunch of burners. They have some good speed, and so does the Leafs. But I think overall it sort of balances out. I don't think it's going to be a detriment to the team in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Chris, anything else that you want to ask?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered it all. I mean, I'm hoping at least with these moves that we get past this first round. I don't know. I'm a little bit more positive than you, Mike, let's just say. But the thing that worries me is the goaltending. I will see how Matt Murray does going forward.
I'll just say this, because I know that there were some people criticizing the fact that they didn't add a goaltender. You know, I think they've been overly careful with Matt Murray. He's been out 6 weeks. You know, they've had Samsonov. The schedule has been favorable in terms of not a lot of back-to-backs. And Joseph Woll, I think, has played pretty well in the three games he's played. So I have a lot of confidence in him. Not to say that they want to insert Joseph Woll in a playoff scenario, but I think I can see a scenario where Joseph Woll is the backup goaltender next year because he's making less than $800,000 and he's having a great year with the Marlies. But I suspect that both of these goaltenders, Murray and Samsonov, are going to be used in a series against Tampa. I don't think it's going to be one guy.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. And I actually think that's the way to go.
Yes. Personally. I think Murray on the road and Samsonov at home. I mean, Samsonov, his record at home at like 17-2-1. It's sickening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know it's unconventional because normally you want to ride the hot guy, but to me, that is riding the hot guy. One guy is really hot at home. The other guy is really good on the road. That's what I would do.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It would lower the workload, obviously, and that has to be a concern with Murray's sort of lack of durability. But I do think they've been overly careful with him because, really, we've known they're going to play Tampa since around the middle of November. This team got Matt Murray for two reasons: Stanley Cup in 2016 and Stanley Cup in 2017. He's won cups and he's played in those games and he's been hardened by the crucible of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I think they wanted to make sure he was completely healthy before they brought him back. And Samsonov has played really well, so he's gotten the workload. And Murray now, you know, may have to shake a little rust off, but I do think he's going to probably end up playing half the games between now and the end of the season. And I think he's going to, if the Leafs get home ice advantage, maybe there's a possibility Samsonov starts at home. But I think when game one rolls around, Matt Murray is going to be the goalie.
Okay. Right. Well, Chris, I guess that's a wrap. Yeah. Is that good with you, Mike?
I have no problem talking, so I...
Well, that's all for today, though.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Mike will be back again as our Ladies Talking Leafs insiders, that's for sure.
Yeah. Definitely before the playoffs, at least once, maybe more than once. So thanks so much, Mike, for being our guest again today. And listeners, remember you can check out Mike's blog on hockeybuzz.com. And if you don't follow him on Twitter, you really should. And you can do that at Mike in Buffalo. That's his handle. So thanks again, Mike.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Again, thanks to Mike for joining us on the show. It's great content that he always gives us, and he has the direct connection with the team, media access with the team. So, we're so thankful that he can
join us on the show and give us all his thoughts on the Leafs. He loves talking Leafs, that's for sure.
So we can't thank him enough, obviously, for making time to join us and talk with us about our favorite team.
Yeah. So as we mentioned off the top of the show, our next episode will be on April the 5th. By then, the Leafs will be in the stretch drive to the playoffs. So, of course, we're not going to leave you listeners on your own out there. We'll be on social media giving you updates from games we attend. So be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and on our YouTube channel. You'll definitely find some videos there. While we're off for a bit, our handle on all our social media platforms is at LTL1917.
And while we're on a bit of a hiatus, check out some of our episodes from earlier in the season. Our November 16th episode includes our segment On the Road with Chris and Syl, where we talk about our road trip to Raleigh, North Carolina. This could definitely come in handy come playoff time.
Yeah.
And also in our January 18th episode, we gave a behind-the-scenes look at the NHL Situation Room, where on-ice plays are reviewed.
Yep. So the refs always come into the game somehow. So if you want to know more about that, check out that episode from January 18th. A reminder to be sure to leave us a rating or review and let us know what you think of the show. It's easy on Apple, Spotify, or even just send us an email, ladiestalkingleafs@gmail.com. And it's important for our show to get more exposure as a source for Leaf content. And we thank you so much for taking the time.
And another way to help us out is by visiting our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can support us by buying us a coffee. Any donation there goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. So you can find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
Thank you to our healthcare workers, as always, and our first responders as well, for everything that they do.
And we thank you as always for listening. So until next time, April 5th, don't forget, go Leafs, go!
Go Leafs, go!
Do you believe?
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.